it's Alison from the Auckland Libraries. We're taking a break this week, so we've picked one of our favourite shows from the archives for you. Enjoy!
Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Kia ora, listeners. Kia ora, Louisa. Kia ora, Karen, and kia ora, everyone. Welcome to Banned Books Week, which starts today. Banned Books Week is an annual event, now in its 36th year, in which we, librarians, booksellers, authors, publishers, and readers, above all, celebrate and defend the freedom to read. It's an initiative of the American Library Association to remind us, just going to use my own words here, Louisa, books make people think dangerous thoughts, thoughts that lead them to rebel against conformity, to question authority, possibly even subvert authority. And people are going to try to ban books because of this, and it's important to fight back against that.
Wow. Thanks, Karen. What an intro. I feel roused in support of the cause, because shortly we're going to go through the ALA's most challenged books for 2017. We've read a few lists on the show over the months and weeks, but this list really intrigues me. So please explain, Karen, the difference between a banned book and a challenged book.
So banned is a term which refers to books which have been outlawed by a government, a church, or another authority for their subversive potential. In democracies, luckily, this doesn't happen very much anymore, but narrow-minded community groups have stepped into the breach. You'll be glad to hear, Louisa. Demanding that public...
Scary.
It does. Demanding that public or school libraries take certain books off their shelves as not fit for consumption by young people, as defined by these groups. This is called challenging a book. So many times, unfortunately, the libraries do remove the books under pressure, but protests almost always bring them back. So as they say, censorship succeeds when no one talks about it. So let's talk about it, Louisa.
Right, here's the list. It's actually a top 10 list for 2017. So number one on the list, 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher. Challenged because it discusses suicide, which I would think isn't a bad thing, but here we go. Number two, Karen.
I just wanted to say that, so that book has probably been propelled to the top of the list because of the Netflix program, I think.
Okay.
So number two is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. And I'm so thrilled that this is my first title up, because I've read this book, and I should actually say I devoured this book. I can't recommend it too strongly. It's always on the challenge list. This year's citation is for being about poverty, alcoholism, sexuality, profanity, and explicit sex. Or, basically, between you and me and our listeners, for being about what life on the res is like. Res meaning the Native American reservation. Yeah, Sherman Alexie is an indigenous American writer who grew up on the res, and the book is semi-autobiographical, told in the voice of a 14-year-old torn between the cultures, the world inside and the world outside the res. And it's an incredible voice. It's conversational and funny, a real 14-year-old voice, but simultaneously harrowing. And, you know, the list of issues, poverty, alcoholism, sexuality, profanity, and sex, I just can't think that any thinking person isn't aware that these are the ugly truths about reservation life. And I know I was, but I just think if there's ever been an example of how literature can heighten awareness and actually make it a visceral thing for you, this is it. It was a really life-changing moment for me. Not that it changed the course of my life, but it definitely changed the course of my night that I stayed up till dawn reading it, in that way that there's something that you can never look at the same way again.
Yeah, well put. Thank you. Yeah, because we've never experienced life on a reservation, so how would we know unless we read about it?
You drive it through, you get a hint, but yeah. The reading it from the voice of the person.
From the voice of the person, yeah. Thank you. So number three on the list is Drama. That's the title. It's a graphic novel by Rainer Tauschermeier, challenged because it includes LGBT characters and was considered confusing.
Number four, The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini, challenged because it includes sexual violence and would lead to terrorism and promote Islam. So this is another book I've read. I think everyone probably has. It's a huge bestseller. I actually have my own problems, Lisa, with the sexual violence in the book. But for me, it was about how poorly it was written. I felt it really read false, and it was a big blot against my pleasure in reading the book. But I don't think this is exactly what the challengers were getting at in decrying the inclusion of sexual violence. But either way, the point is you can't censor a book because of your personal reaction to it. Other people need to read it and have their own personal reactions. And as for leading to terrorism, I don't think, Lisa, that I'm going to even waste our precious time on that.
Okay, I didn't read that one. I read the second one, A Thousand Splendid Suns, which seems to be a feminine version dealing with the same issues, but female version, and wasn't banned. So there you go. Or challenged. Number five on the list, George by Alex Gino, a children's book which was challenged for including transgender children character. You'll like this, Karen, because George dreams of playing the main character in Charlotte's Web, and I know you're a fan.
Oh, wait, so that must be Wilbur. But actually, I've always dreamed of kind of being Charlotte myself, and the older I get, the more I think about being Charlotte. So number six is Sex is a Funny Word. This is an informational children's book written by a certified sex educator, which was challenged because it is believed to lead children to want to have sex or ask questions about sex.
Okay. It's horror for bird. Then number seven on the list, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Well, this is another book which has always been challenged for being, here we go, quoting, filthy, trashy, from the other side, because it contains racial slurs. It was challenged this year in a Mississippi school district because it makes people uncomfortable. And I'm astounded at that reason for challenging it, uncomfortable. What message is this sending to children in the Mississippi district area? I mean, are they going to encourage children to turn their backs on everything in life that makes them feel uncomfortable?
Exactly, yeah. Or their own history, because, you know, you think about what's been in the news recently in America with these southern towns that people are asking to remove the memorials to the Confederate government in the South, and people think, oh, well, why? If you don't know what life was like in the South under that regime, then you don't know why it's such a trauma to keep those monuments and those memorials up there. So it's, you know, you can't turn your back on what other times were like. But and the other thing about that is, you know, classics are a typical example of the kind of book which really bring home that factor of a great book should make you feel somewhat uncomfortable. It should be pushing you out of your comfort zone and making you think more widely. Don't you think?
Yes, I do think. I agree. I mean, that's the whole point to us challenging these challenges,
right.
I think, is that, you know, it's a pushback against other people's point of views. But,
yeah.
The debate will continue, I think, for...
Yeah, exactly. So it's the debate. So rather than pushing back, it's the fact of using some critical thinking and discussing it.
Mm.
And I can point to a really... Thank you. Well, I'm actually borrowing that in a way. I mean, it might be my words, but I'm borrowing it from the fantastic Roxane Gay, who I recently read a wonderful essay that she wrote about The Help. So another huge bestseller, feel-good book, feel-good movie. And she wrote a wonderful essay with some critical thinking in it about why, although she said, you know, I went to the movie, I cried like everyone else and this and that, but it actually made me uncomfortable. There were a lot of things that made me uncomfortable. In particular, there's a really compelling part of her essay about the magic Negro role, which is this is the, you know, get together with me and I'll fry you up some chicken and I'll put you more in touch with your inner self that you as a white person might be able to get in touch with, but I, the magic Negro, can show you the way. And that's why I was going, yeah, critical thinking. This is what we should be looking for.
Yes, and let's move along on the list. Number eight.
Number eight is The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas, which was challenged for being pervasively vulgar and because of drug use, profanity, and offensive language.
Oh, okay. So that one's got a slightly different reasons for being challenged.
Once again, teen reasons,
yeah.
I'd say. Drug use, profanity. It's a teen book. Yeah, almost every book on this list is teen or children's books.
Oh, they are. I've just realized that.
Yeah.
You're so right. They are.
Because it's a list that comes from books being challenged in school libraries, above all.
Yeah. So number nine on the list. So here we have a children's picture book, and Tango Makes Three A picture book which has been challenged repeatedly because it features a same-sex relationship between penguins at the Central Park Zoo in New York. But it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
So I'm just lost for words on this one. I mean, all I can say is why, you know? I mean, it's the most adorable children's picture
it
book.
It is.
The storytelling is quality. The illustrations are quality. You know, what's wrong with our children knowing that, you know, there are same-sex penguins have same-sex relationships just like humans do.
Yeah, and they adopt a little baby penguin, I believe, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The zookeeper clicks onto their relationship and does something about it and gives them an egg and they have their own family. Yeah, it's really adorable.
Yeah. Another way in which penguins lead is the fact that fathers do take care of the children.
That's right.
Yeah, something it's we're still striving short. To make mainstream. Yeah.
And I'm pleased to announce that this picture book is available in our libraries.
Certainly is.
Freely.
And you had it out yesterday, I believe. We had a look at it. Mm. So I Am Jazz leads the final entry on the list. This is a picture book co-written by the 13-year-old protagonist, which was challenged because it addresses gender identity, or the fact that gender identity can be complicated. So that's the last of this American-flavored list. But actually, we have an excellent example of a challenged book here in Aotearoa. And that's Ted Daw's young adult novel, Into the River. So just a few years ago, Into the River was challenged by Family First, at the same time that Auckland Libraries had appealed the rating that had been given, which was restricting it to readers 14 years and over. So the library cited that the significance of the book was as an aid to countering issues in New Zealand about bullying and believing, in the words of our then collections manager, young people need to be allowed the freedom to read widely, to read books that are relevant to them, and to be able to make their own reading choices.
Oh, love that line too.
Isn't that great? Yeah. Louisa Hatt, thank you for that.
I've got my banner.
So the restriction was eventually taken off and the book is now unrestricted. You can get it at your local library and I believe you did, Louisa?
Yeah. Well, I've read it. So I've read Into the River. When my boys were teens, I had this thing where I was reading quite a few teen books and this was one. I don't recall... I borrowed it from the library, so I don't know if it was banned at the time. I mean, thanks for explaining the history of that, because it was banned, it wasn't banned, it was being challenged, it was rather confusing. But to me, it was no different from the other teen books and young adult books that I was reading at the time, except that it is set in New Zealand and the others weren't. They were all, what's the term you use, Karen? Coming-of-age stories. Mm. And they all had sex, drugs, alcohol scenes in them, you know.
As our world does.
Yeah. And it made me think of another book I read around the time, The Beginner's Guide to Living, by another New Zealand-born writer, Leah Hills, who is based in Australia now. So, and she has a 17-year-old boy dealing with grief, whereas Te Arapa in Into the River is dealing with bullying and identity issues. But they all both go off the rails you know, try to deal with life. They are disturbing and mm-hmm. they are sad stories, and I did find the books confronting. You know, the mother of me was just feeling for these young men, and I guess because these young men are confronted with these sort of new life, this is all new experiences to them, you know, they are trying to deal with it, and it makes me think, well, why is one book banned and not the other?
You know? Well, in this particular case, I think it's the ones that a particular group spots, because they're probably not big readers. They're not out there reading all the books when one comes to their attention.
Doing a little bit of critical thinking myself, I was thinking perhaps Into the River was a little too close to home.
Could be. For Family First,
That some people can identify not just with what they're reading, but also the associations that came with it. For example, bullying, Into the River, bullying in a boarding school located in Mount Eden, Auckland.
Yep.
You know, it is a little too close for comfort, perhaps. I don't know, so I'll just leave that one there.
Well, you know, it reminds me of this wonderful line that Ted Daw said. He came in and talked at Central Library in that period while the book was banned, and he had, I can't remember if he had the cover of it or he had a copy of it, but it was like, you know, closed up with elastic bands because he couldn't legally put it into any of our hands. So that's the thing. When the book was banned, you cannot even supply it to anyone. You can't sell it, you can't lend it, you can't supply it. And he was saying, you know, it was such a surprise when this whole thing started that he said, I didn't realize we still censored books. And of course, neither do most people. But anyway, so the best line of the night, and I have it here written down because it was so beautifully said. He said, writers hold up a mirror to the world, and sometimes the world doesn't like what it sees. This is true in New Zealand. If Into the River has made aspects of our society look ugly, then hiding the mirror will not make it beautiful again.
Well put.
Isn't that well put?
I think I was trying to say that.
Yeah.
But he did it so much better.
He really did. And you know, when the book was unbanned, I want to tell this last thing, there were 50 people on the wait list. So it actually, these appeals, these filings against books, these challenges often actually awake more interest in a way. But the funny thing was, Ted Doss said when he, because I was saying, okay, now I've got 50 books to send out to the public who's on the wait list. And I thought, I wonder how many of these are the critics of the book or how many are, you know, who, because they heard of this story. And Ted Doss said, in fact, on that night, he said, you know, my critics are always saying, I haven't read it and I don't intend to. So, you know, what does that tell you about these people? I ask.
Gosh, makes me wonder how they knew about it. But anyway, so Karen, it's Banned Book Week, and you've developed this wonderful poster for it, and it will be available and display in all our libraries, hopefully, in the next coming week or so. So I really like the slogan. It's already in the library. You're looking at me.
Well, it's Sunday. It's Sunday. The week starts today. For libraries that are open today, you should be seeing it today.
I know. It's already up.
Yeah. No worries.
We're very organized in the library, aren't we? Sorry.
You were being self-deprecating on behalf of libraries.
On behalf of libraries. Oh, no. Maybe they haven't got it up yet. You know, not all libraries open on Sundays. So I like the slogan, closing books shuts out ideas.
Good line, isn't it?
Well yeah. done, yeah.
Yeah.
Another great line from Karen. So,
I think I borrowed it from someone. But a good choice. A good choice from me.
So, listeners can't see the images on the poster. You'll have to go into your local library to see that. But it has images of books that have been banned through history. So I was wondering if you could tell us more about these books on the poster.
Well, I thought you'd never ask, Louisa.
I got to it in a roundabout way, didn't
you? So the books start off, the covers that you see on the poster start off with Candide. So this is like the obvious one to pick as the first candidate because this book was written by Voltaire. We're talking 18th century, 1759. Voltaire is the very man who is always misquoted as saying, I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. That was his creed, note, but the line was not actually said by him. It was written by a biographer of him, of Voltaire. So Candide, which is just a slight novella, I want to point out, a very thin little book. And in this book, Voltaire manages to take on the entire big three of his day. So that's religion, government, and philosophy, the prevailing philosophical views of the time. Not surprisingly, it was placed on the Vatican's prohibited books index and banned across Europe as blasphemous, seditious, and immoral.
Wow.
And then the next
well
one.
Well done, Voltaire.
Well done, Voltaire, the father of us all, father of Banned Books Week. Number two, we have the Divine Comedy. So luckily, not all, but many copies of Dante's masterpiece, The Divine Comedy, were burned to ashes in a bonfire of the vanities. Have you heard that term? It's a term from the medieval world where objects that were considered occasions of sin were publicly burned in bonfires. And this particular one was organized by a frenzied monk in Florence who eventually went too far with his frenzy and was excommunicated and publicly burned himself.
Ah.
Yes. Those who, what is it? Something by the sword, perish by the sword?
Mm. So there has been through history this burning of books, isn't it? This public burning of books.
There certainly has. Another burned book, another burned and banned book. Number three, we have Ulysses. This is the modernist masterpiece by James Joyce, which was declared obscene in many, many different countries and was burned by the U.S. Post Office because, you know, it follows a man through the course of his day, 24 hours, and, you know, the course of his day includes sex, also eating, arguing about politics, eating kidneys in particular, his favorite meal, arguing about politics and betting on horses. but the one that bothered people was the sex. And then Ghosts, a 19th century play by the Norwegian giant Henrik Ibsen, which was banned in England and Ireland for attacking religion, defending free love, and daring to mention such Victorian realities as incest and syphilis. Gargantua and Pantagruel, so we're back to the 16th century here. This is a comic masterpiece by the French writer Rabelais, and the most onomatopoeic name I know of for a comic writer, which was banned for crudity, scatological humor, violence, earthy sex, and, why not, satirical comments about religion.
Probably the real reason it was banned, was it?
Possibly, yes. In fact, I was thinking of the phrase, is nothing sacred, or, as you could say in this case, sacre bleu. Thanks for liking my joke. Then, Life and Fate. Okay, this is not a joke. This is the most chilling one of all for me. Life and Fate is a Russian novel written in the 1950s about World War II, which was banned in the USSR for 30 years. And listen to this. So when the Soviet authorities went to the author's house, Vasily Grossman, they confiscated not only the manuscript, but the typewriter ribbon he had used to write it. That's how scared they were.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody was going to get it back from the typewriter ribbon.
Yeah.
And then we have Lolita. So banned in the 1950s as obscene just about everywhere, even in New Zealand. Probably needs no introduction. One of the most controversial books still being talked about and read today and debated. I did love seeing the comment someone made during last year's summer reading challenge, where one of the challenges was to read a banned book. And they said, it made me uncomfortable, but I'm glad I read it. Harking back to our conversation about comfort zones. Then Brave New World, so this is a funny one, published in 1932. So this was banned in Ireland and Australia for being anti-religion, anti-family, and blasphemous. Huxley's irony having gone completely over the censor's head. And then to bring it up, what do we call it, to wrap up?
Wrap up.
Bringing up the rear. To use a military term, which is probably appropriate because it's All Quiet on the Western Front. This is a German novel from between the wars, which was publicly burned by the Nazis and also banned in Italy. So if you note, we're talking Germany and Italy, the countries that were in that period on their way to a war of aggression, which would eventually cause 60 million deaths. And they didn't want their subjects reading this story of a German battalion in World War I who was stationed on the Western Front. Written by someone who'd been there as a soldier and then as a hospital orderly. It's considered one of the greatest anti-war novels of all time. And I'm going to say I just reread it in honor of Banned Books Week coming up. Mm-hmm. And I could not believe how beautiful and powerful the writing was. It's just an amazing book. So if you think Slaughterhouse-Five is the greatest anti-war novel, or Catch-22, or Farewell to Arms, and I've read all of those and they are all great, you need to read this book.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. I better...
My pleasure.
Check it out of the library.
I can give you my copy. I can give you the copy I got from the library.
Thank you. Wow, that was really interesting. Thank you for that. I mean, I think...
Carousel through history?
Yeah, because I think you've used the poster a couple of years now, but it's going to have so much more meaning for us or to us from that explanation. So thank you. How are we going for time, by the way?
You're good. You're going to our little special addendum here.
I am, because when our colleague Renee was in here last week for Women's Suffrage Anniversary with you, Karen, I had a week off, and she heard we were celebrating banned books today, she suggested a New Zealand banned book, Curiosity, which came to her attention while she was preparing for the suffrage exhibition at Central Library. So it's called Safe Marriage by Etty Root.
I'm thinking Rout, but...
Rout. Okay, so I'm just going to read what Renee's prepared for us, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
So thank you for helping with the surname. Etty Rout was a journalist, socialist, and safer sex campaigner who caused a moral panic in New Zealand by publicly discussing the venereal disease epidemic amongst soldiers fighting the First World War. Etty's initiatives included setting up the New Zealand Soldiers Medical Club in England, where soldiers could buy safer sex kits. condoms, etc., that she had manufactured herself. So she also put pressure on the government and military officials through open letters to New Zealand newspapers exposing the issue, which ultimately resulted in the military providing her kits for free to New Zealand soldiers. This was hugely controversial, and it was seen as at making sin safe.
Shock.
Even though it was actually making New Zealand soldiers safe for the woman of New Zealand.
Well said, Renee.
So in 1922, she published a book called Safe Marriage, subtitled A Return to Sanity, a bestseller in England and Australia, but, I can't believe this, banned in New Zealand.
Why?
The book was a guide to methods which women can could avoid catching venereal diseases and, more controversially, perhaps even avoid pregnancy. The book opens with the statement, "At present, marriage is easily the most dangerous of all our social institutions."
So definitely a radical opening for a book published in 1922.
I guess she had to be. Yeah. You know, she had fought so hard for her cause. And a very good cause as
well. She was speaking the truth as she saw it. So, in a lighter tone, I also have a New Zealand story. This is not a New Zealand book, but this is a story about something that happened in New Zealand, actually in Auckland. And this story is about Enid Blyton. Mm-hmm. So, I happen to know that Enid Blyton's books were kept off the Auckland library shelves by many librarians. Did you know that?
Yeah.
No. So before my time, but I did ask someone who'd been there, and she confirmed it was not a policy, but well-meaning librarians would keep them in the back room. And this is interesting, not because of the casual racism or sexism or classism that Blyton does express in her books, being a woman not ahead of her time, but because of their scarce literary value. So I have this great quote from the head, did a little research, the head of the BBC Department of Schools, who evidently felt the same way.
So this is where it came from then.
Or it well expresses what our librarians over here independently thought.
Okay.
They haven't much literary value, but are competently written without sentimentality on the whole. There is rather a lot of the pinky winky doodle doodle dum dum type name and lots of pixies in the original tales. And in the nature study tales, a very animistic tendency and no feeling for the true characteristics of different animals. That's it. That's our lighthearted story for the day.
That's very BBC, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, in those days.
So that's our look at Banned Books Week. And I've got one last important consideration to put out there. I think you'll join me in this.
Oh, Lisa. I know. I know. Yes.
When we celebrate Banned Books Week, we are also celebrating the fact that when organizations ban books, the books always outlive the bans.
Oh, I wanted us to just read that out together, actually.
Well, shall we try it? Where are we starting? When organizations ban books, the books always outlive the ban. So I hope we've illustrated that for you today. And then we say you had a little addendum here, another great addendum.
Oh, have we got time for this?
Yes, we do.
I just thought, I'm sorry, we've had this big fanfare farewell.
Couldn't miss this one.
But on behalf of our lovely hosts today, Planet FM, a shout out from them. Every year, Forest and Bird runs a competition encouraging people to vote for New Zealand's Bird of the Year. I know this isn't about banned books, but this year we're joining our wonderful Planet FM hosts and backing the Kotari, the Kingfisher. So just a little bit of a campaign here.
So a call out.
Yeah. So please, from between October 1st to 15th this year, head to the birdoftheyear.org.nz website. Did we get that? birdoftheyear.org.nz, and cast a vote for this wonderful bird.
Yeah, I see there's a description, which actually makes me think that the Kotari would definitely be a bird, four-letter word with a B, that would support Banned Books Week, because the Kotari is a bird of the people, hanging out on a power line near you with its glorious turquoise coat and its penchant for mice, lizards, tadpoles, and of course, fish for breakfast. Every reason to vote.
Nice tie up there, Karen. Thank you.
All right.
Is that a wrap for our show today?
Yes, it is.
Oh, such a great show. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
And don't forget, you can leave feedback on the Auckland Library's blog or on any of our social media channels. Tell us what you want us to talk about.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week.
Okay. Ka kite anō.
Brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day, every day, every day.